So at last Coffee and Catholicism, I kind of shared some of the experiences that I had on the 30-day silent retreat. And one of the parts that's maybe surprising to people is that there are 2 days that over the course of the last 5 centuries of the spiritual exercises being offered, kind of learned that, you know, the retreatants need just a slight lessening of the disciplines of the retreat, including the silence. So there are 2 days that are built in, kind of at the third and the two-thirds part of the way through. They're called days of repose. And within certain parameters, you're allowed to speak with the other people on the retreat. But what was really surprising is as they were preparing us for that, the retreat director, he said, whatever you talk about, don't talk about what you are experiencing in the midst of the retreat, which was at first just really surprising because it's like, well, I haven't been talking for over a week, so I don't know what I'm supposed to talk about then. But the explanation makes a lot of sense. You only know where you're at with the Lord in the midst of the retreat. You don't know where anyone else on the retreat is at. You don't know how fast God is working with them, how slow God is working with them. You don't know what He is doing in their hearts. And so you don't want to, on one side, invite them to pride, oh, look at how much God has done in me. On the other side, invite them to despair. Why are they having that experience? What's wrong with me? Why isn't God doing X, Y, or Z as quick in me as He's doing it in them? There's a little bit of that in this story that we have of the Transfiguration today, right? That we see that Peter, James, and John not only don't share what they've experienced, but as we know from the other gospel accounts, are told not to share. There's a lot that's going on in the experience of the Transfiguration. And there's also a lot that goes on in our own lives, and so it becomes the perfect icon for us in the midst of the experience of the season of Lent. So we see Peter respond in a way that is actually different from the way he normally responds. Right, so yes, he has his usual boldness and wants to take action and do something. But he isn't rebuked. Yeah, Luke says, well, he didn't know what he was saying, right? Because he doesn't understand what's going on. But then before he even has a chance to say anything else, the cloud comes and the Father speaks. This is my chosen Son. Listen to him. So, Peter actually has an understandable response. And in fact, one that is good-natured, right? Here is something divine. It's good to be here. It's good to attend to this. And it isn't selfish. So often we kind of point out, oh, they wanted to stay on the mountain. Let's build tents. Notice who he wants to build tents for. It is for the Lord, for Moses, and Elijah. And in fact, the word in Hebrew is tabernacles. It's to build a place for those who are holy to dwell. He's not saying, let's build 6 tents and camp out together. He has the right understanding of who and what is in front of him. And the fear that they're experiencing is in response to the intense holiness of what's going on. So let's look at our own lives. We may be in the midst of the season of Lent and be going, I wish there's a lot that would change. Right, I'm showing up, I'm doing my stuff spiritually, but I wish that my vocation was going better. I wish that I had greater clarity in my vocation. I wish that this virtue that I've been trying to grow in would increase in me. I wish this vice that I've been fighting would ebb away finally. So we have to be there. Or maybe on the other side of things, we're having a very powerful experience of Lent in terms of consolation. Things have never been better in my vocation. I'm feeling closer to the Lord than I've ever felt before. This change has taken place in my heart that I've been longing for. God has something to say to all of us in the midst of this. Because while Peter's impulse is good, God has even more that he wants to give. Right? He is showing that he is a God who is not going to be contained. That the experience that they're having isn't everything that he wants to say. That the cloud that comes and surrounds them is a better image of God than the tents that they wanted to build. That God is beyond their expectation. And we can say that he's beyond their expectation insofar as they're going to go down the mountain and go to the horrific event of the crucifixion. But he's also beyond their expectation in terms of the glory that's been revealed. That it isn't something that's just going to be contained even to the Lord, to the Messiah himself, but that because of the way that God is, because of his desire for us as human beings, that glory is going to also transform us, them. He has more that he desires to do in Peter, James, and John, and in us. This is what the other two readings really reveal to us. So we see the experience of Abram entering into covenant with God, right? So this actually lays bare the Hebrew word for covenant, for setting a covenant. You don't make a covenant, you cut a covenant, right? So it's sealed in blood of these animals that creates this isle. It's a mysterious, mystical kind of experience that happens. And in fact, in Hebrew, that word for the trance that falls on Abram where he falls asleep is the same word that's used earlier in Genesis to talk about Adam being cast into a sleep when God creates Eve. So this is something that is indicative of God fulfilling his plans, going beyond the expectation that had already been set. There is some new creation that is taking place. So God is not just cutting this covenant. He isn't just promising Abram the descendants beyond the number of the stars of the sky. He's also promising a new creation that is going to come, something new that's going to take place in him and in all of his descendants. So again, to come back to us, whether we are having the most desolate Lent that we've ever had, or the most consoling one, or somewhere in between, God isn't done with us yet. He has more that he desires to give. He is still working to bring about a new creation in each of us. And so this is why St. Paul is so deeply concerned with the subject of our second reading. And this is from Philippians, right? Paul's most joyful letter. These are people who are precious to him. This is the end of his ministry. He is close to martyrdom at this point. He has seen almost all that God has done with him as a man who was deeply sinful, very confused. And so he kind of veers into this very real warning to not become enemies of the cross of Christ, to not draw back from God continuing to work in our lives, even in the midst of suffering. Because there will be all sorts of things in this life that will whisper to us, this is enough glory for you, this is enough satisfaction. And so he uses the image there, God is their stomach. Right, the stuff that satisfies us, even temporarily, it whispers to us, this is enough. This is the evil one taking and tweaking the things that are good in the stuff of this world, the things that aren't meant to keep us here, but to point our vision onward to the place that our citizenship actually is. Every good thing, even the things that satisfy our appetites in legitimate ways, are foretastes, are echoes of heaven. But we get things wrong when we say, well, let me contain the glory according to my terms. Let me set myself up here with the glory that I can control. But God goes, no, I have so much more that I want to give. That's the last thing the evil one wants us to hear. What he wants us to experience is just the fear of what feels like darkness as God's glory draws close to us. But what we see all the way back at the beginning of the covenant with Abraham, the moment of the transfiguration, and even now in our experience of the new covenant in the sacraments, the generosity of God that says, I have more to give to you. So this is the mystery that we draw close to in the Eucharist. Where no, there isn't the frightening cloud, and in fact, God has so made himself small that there is nothing outwardly frightening about the Eucharist. But when we receive him there, do we allow it to be that reminder that he is not done with us yet? It is food for the journey. Even the last Holy Communion that we receive, that's called Viaticum traditionally in the life of the church, the last Holy Communion that we receive before we die is still called food for the journey. That's what that translates to. So even in the last Holy Communion that we receive, the church goes, God still has more to give. So we are reoriented in the second Sunday of Lent, not just to how glorious Jesus is, not just being reminded of the cross, but in the way that that whole mystery of God working to fulfill the covenant comes together, he is making us new so that the glory we see in Jesus as the beloved Son is extended to, is given to us, that we are caught up into it as adopted sons and daughters. That our lowly body, as Paul says, is transformed to conform with his glorious body, to be able to share in the glory that led Peter, James, and John to say, all right, let's contain this. God goes, no, there's no containing this because it's meant for you too. So may we receive our Lord with that great confidence in that he's finally revealed the tabernacle that he does want to dwell in, which is our own heart. Because it's there that his glory can be revealed in its fullness, not as something contained, but as something set loose, to the fruitfulness, the fulfillment of the covenant that God made, of sons and daughters of Abraham more numerous than the stars of the sky and more radiant than them. And we hear maybe an echo of the voice of the Father and what St. Paul says to his beloved Philippians. You are the ones whom I love and long for, my joy and my crown. As we receive Jesus, as we receive word, I have more to give. May we hear the words of the Father as a promise of the son or daughter that he is raising us to the full stature of. May we find that food for the journey and continue journeying on, not accepting any glory in this life as a substitute, but longing for the glory of our home, of our union with God in heaven.